The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1063. It's Thursday, the 10th of May, 2018. Check out our new podcast. It's called Business Lives. It's a new series, and we feature people or high-profile in the world of business. And you can check that out at foxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. Okay, on today's podcast, I have Colin Bird, chairman of Bezant Resources, BZT. And Colin discusses their strategic review of their copper-gold assets in the Philippines and Argentina. Also on the podcast, I have Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tuple. That's T-O-O-P. And Andy goes through some of the highlights from their interim results and gives some guidance on the outlook. Also, it's a Thursday, so Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, is here, and he covers the following stocks. BT.A is the ticker, but I don't know why I said that. But the final results out. I didn't think they were as bad as the share price is showing at the moment. It's down 9%, and Chris agrees with me. And they've got a dividend of 7% at the moment at this level. So anyway, have a listen to that. What do you think? Also covers Next, NXT, and ITV, which is ITV. Plus, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bezant Resources. That's BZT ticker. Colin, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Now, you've announced a copper and gold strategic review of Bezant Resources, and we'll go through that in a bit, Colin. For people not aware of Bezant Resources, can you explain what the company's all about, please?
Well, Bezant Resources has got had three projects. It's now got two. It's got a project called Mangkayan, which is a large, very large copper project in the Philippines. It's got Eureka, which is a gold copper project in the northwest of Argentina. And it has just disposed of its interest in alluvial deposits in the Choco province of Colombia. So in essence, it's a three-leg company, which is now a two-leg company. And this myself, associates, bought into the company some time ago, and I joined the board. And of course, when change comes, it's sensible to have a review of where you're at, where you want to go. And that's just what we've done, and that's what this RNS is all about. We're reporting the results of our strategic internal review.
Marvellous. Well, Colin, take us through what you found and what you're doing and the review, please, if you could.
Well, you know that things change, and management have got to be change agents as well. And it's no good being just behind the game. You've got to be quite a bit in front of the game. And game it isn't, of course, because it's very serious business, is mining. But we have no doubt, collectively as a board, that the potential for large copper projects is going to get better and better, the market for large copper projects. We're also convinced that the mid-sector and the mid-tier of producers has gone. And we're also convinced that all of the budget constraints and the hard-nosed approach that the majors add to their businesses means that not a lot was spent on trying to find new copper. And so from that perspective, we feel that copper is the place to be. And both our projects, coincidentally or incidentally, are have got gold in association. And so the review said to us that, look, the biggest mileage is in copper gold. We shouldn't really continue with Choker because it's an operation. Its contribution could never be the contribution of either of these projects, particularly Mangkayan. So let's dispose of it, and dispose of it we did. Mm-hmm. So now, where are we at? We're at a situation where we have totally reviewed the Mangkayan project. At desk research, we've visited all of the information, and we're sure that this project fits very well in the grand scheme of things. If Major's looking for a ready-made project with a York code, they're looking at Mangkayan of 300 million tons, best part of 300 million tons, at around about 0.49% copper, at about half a gram of gold. That is very, very valuable, or rocking ground, if you like. But, you know, Goldfields, actually, just before they left, they drilled a significant hole down to 1,400 metres, and we report in this strategic review. That was almost overlooked, almost overlooked. And that's a cracking hole. That's 1.04 grams, I think it is, and around about 0.65% copper. That is truly valuable rock. We think there's a lot more of it on the eastern side. So, again, back to Mankayan, that there was an offer here, you know, for about $75 million by Goldfields of South Africa. So you've actually got this project franked. You know, it's got a stamp all over it which says $75 million. The fact that they went elsewhere to pursue their gold mission doesn't take away the fact that this was, this, you know, this project is franked. And I guess what really excites me, having done this review, is that we're in the middle of a mining district. Others are mining successfully, and one of the mines has been going for about 50 years. So Mankayan, the board had, during this review and getting in depth, had no doubt at all that this is a super project for a company with a 3 million market cap to have in its portfolio, totally unrecognised by the trade, by the market, and with the JORC code. Boy, what a start we've got there in our strategic focus. Eureka, I went off down there as soon as I actually joined the team. And the prognosis there, this is suggesting that 600,000 tons of copper contained in ground with 50,000 ounces of gold. Quite frankly, Justin, that I don't think the gold contribution is well understood. I don't think the... in fact, I'm convinced that charge abilities are good geophysics being recognised. It hasn't been explored. There's limited three-dimensional assessment. And so Eureka could well pull itself up by the bootstraps very, very quickly and be a very important part of our portfolio. But at the moment, you know, if you just sat with Mankayan, what a joy. What a nice position to be in. The government welcomes foreign investment. A project which fits in the top end of all the projects available globally. Underground quarrying, it really is massive, massive bulk mining. And Lawrence, in his statement there, says quite rightly that we're going to sit and review, because when you get these situations, there's many ways of skinning the cat. You know, do you go at it one it? Do you have a staged approach? Can you? Always in mining, it's the cost of entry. If you minimise the cost of entry, then you minimise the capital cost. So I'm going and getting involved in that too. We'll end up with a mine design, I'm sure, which will reduce the capital significantly. And this project will move from drawing board to development as fast as we possibly can do it, Justin. And that sums up our focus. It's about copper. It's about gold. It's about cutting down the monthly overheads of Colombia, disposing of that project, having a pure focus with Mankayan as our flagship, and Eureka behind, but not that far behind, that the drill machine will quickly get it alongside. So that's my summary.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It is going to, you know, a big resource, you know, for like, you know, the company, like you said, is at, what, 3 million market cap, Bezant. And so I'm just querying why it's so low. And I'm thinking, but you say here, you know, Philippines, they welcome foreign investment. So why do you think people haven't recognized this resource?
Oh, I don't think it is recognised, and that's what brought me to knock on the door, onto Lawrence's door and Ed Neatland's door. Ed was former chairman, and Lawrence, of course, is still with the company, and his chief executive was that under recognition, that lack of recognition. Do you know what? I mean, I don't think your show is a place to philosophise, but forgive me if I do. I think there's so much disappointment when the major mining companies offer. They didn't consummate it, they went elsewhere. I think there was profound disappointment. Copper.
So when was that offer? When was that offer then?
It was about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, so okay.
Copper was languishing. They went off to, you know, go. The major mining company went off to do other things in Australia. And I think a combination of disappointment, bad market conditions for copper. I think that in actual fact pushed it into the background. And then the company, of course, did other things. So I think that what was a super project, essentially, was in danger of paling into oblivion. And you know, just in that... when I went through the fundamentals prior to talking to Lawrence and Ted, when I went through the fundamentals, I thought, just the question that you just asked me, I asked myself, how on earth can a company be have such a small market cap with such a huge asset with a jolt code, you know? Well along the line, it's, you know, it's pink ribbon time, this one is. Let's refine the numbers, let's optimize it, let's do some engineering, and you've got a project which is world class. So I asked myself the very same question, and quite frankly that motivated me to make an investment, and Lawrence, I'm very pleased to say, accepted my services and asked me to join the board and assist him. So all in all, opportunity spotted, project languishing. A wonderful opportunity, and an environment. We're going into an environment where, boy, will this project be well received?
Yeah. And as far as you know, funds are concerned, you've just received the payment, or most of the payment, haven't you, from that disposal, a Chuckle project? Is that right?
That's right. There's just the mechanics of getting money into the tin, which are not quite finished, but they're doing it. They're due imminently, and so that assists. And there was a fundraising. So at the moment we really want to get all our ducks in a row. But why would you announce a strategic study? I can understand people saying, well, what's this all about? Tell us something you've done real.
Yeah.
But, you know, a strategic study done properly, Justin, is something real.
Yeah.
We haven't just sort of kicked the tires and tossed a few pieces of paper around. We've really looked. We got out, the decision to go to copper gold was quick easy, but how Mankind sits in that story and how Eureka sits in the story, not so easy. So we've done real in-depth study, and we're convinced we've got certainly one super project, which is world-class and ready for the off, and just needs some more optimization and engineering, possibly some drill holes, we'll look into that. And Eureka, which... you know, the responsible mining companies have suggested 600,000 tons of copper as a start point, with very good geophysics. So off we go. I think we've got a core there, which lots would envy. And you know, I don't want to keep harping on the 3 million market cap, but to try and go around the world and buy Mankind for 3 million if the boot was on the other foot. So very pleased with the position.
Marvelous.
And we've got a team who's committed to bring in the value out as well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, listen, Colin, one last thing to do. If someone's listening to this right now and likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add BZT to their watch list, please.
Well, first of all, it's a copper gold project. The company's focusing on copper gold. Secondly, the copper gold project Mankind is super and fits in the top few in the world. And third, the entry price to this, shall we call it a club, the entry price into this company does not match the assets. There's a natural disconnect between, a massive disconnect between the potential value and the existing value of the assets and the market cap. So in a nutshell, good time to be involved in Bizan Resources.
Colin, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very much indeed. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tuple PLC. It's T-O-O-P ticker. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, you've had your interim results out for the period ended the 31st of March, and we'll go through that in a bit. Before we do, as always, for people listening not familiar with Tuple, summarise the business, if you could, Andy.
Yes, certainly. Tuple is an online-first telecoms company that's dedicated to the UK small business market. We provide solutions to small businesses that include data connectivity, cloud-based telephony, and mobile SIM connections. The DNA of Tuple is transparent and disruptive pricing that is always fixed for the small business for the duration of the contract. So those are our core values, and those are why small businesses have been selecting Tuple since market entry.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so the interim results. Take us through some of the highlights here, if you could.
Yeah, the first half of the year has seen continued net growth in the customer base, increasing the revenues, in the small business area by 54%. Also increasing the services that are ordered per customer. So each customer is becoming more valuable in revenue and gross profit. And indeed, gross profit increased over the period by 7%. We've also seen a 63% increase in orders over the period and a 38% increase in billable customers. So that underpins that the customers are buying more products per customer. Finally, we actually deliberately took our wholesale revenue down during the period by 5%, which is obviously then comes through in terms of the 10% revenue growth. And that's because we had some revenue in the wholesale business that was very, very low margin. And we wanted to move that away and migrate that away so that we can now focus going forwards on revenue in the wholesale business that comes and growth that comes from our Merlin software license fees, which is a higher margin business.
I understand. And you made a decision to transition from using a sales team that's outsourced pretty much to an in-house sales team. Why have you done this and what's the impact, Andy?
Yeah, that was a significant decision we took in November. And we transitioned our sales resource that was historically on an outsourced contract in-source. And we launched our own sales centre in the northwest in Warrington, and we went live the first week in January with our own telecoms experienced advisors. And we recruited those during the November and the December period, and then transitioned over first week in January. We believe it's shown to be the right decision because in the first 3 months of this year, January, February, and March, they doubled the orders compared to the same period last year. In fact, actually, they went by 113% increase on the orders for January, February, March this year. Materially, they also reduced the pre-go-live cancellations. And as you can see from the results, they're selling more products per customer. And finally, it's also expected to provide a material cost saving going forward. So I think absolutely the right decision. Really, really positive in terms of the performance for January, February, March. Doubling the business, 113% increase, more products per customer. Absolutely the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and of course, the results up to the end of March. So going forward, post-period, any updates there?
Yeah, post-period, obviously, just right into now the second half of the year. Really pleased to report that growth has continued. In fact, in April, Tuple recorded a record month for orders in April. And the first week and a bit of May has already started very strongly. So we believe that we can accelerate order growth materially through our digital marketing strategy and through our own in-sales house team.
Marvellous stuff. Well, Andy, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of the progress you're making with these interim results and the post-period, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, number one, Tuple is no longer about testing concepts. The brand has been accepted by the small business market and grows net monthly, and growth, we believe, is accelerating. Number two, all of our revenue is contracted annuity revenue, typically of 24 months or longer. And we are a low-cost operating model, which is the third point, supported by our own software platform, ensuring revenue growth does not come at increased costs of overhead.
Marvellous stuff, Andy. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Hello, Justin. Good morning to you.
Now, Chris, you bring me the news of the bigger market cap stuff because I inhabit the smaller, almost micro cap arena. But today, I do hold one of the big stocks reporting today. It's BT, and it's down massively, but they reported like job cuts of 13,000, which is they were sort of saving 800 million. So I don't understand what's going on. And to me, the revenue and profits weren't that bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we all know that shares are a bit of a random walk sometimes, but BT, the numbers today, look, here's the good news. So long as you're not an employee, the fact they're talking about an efficiency drive of actually a cool £1.5 billion over the next few years is typically taken well by stock markets. Additionally, they've held the dividend, so the dividend is going to be circa 15 pence, not just this year, but next year and the year after. And you don't need to be a genius to work out that a 220 something pence share price, 15 pence dividend is a pretty attractive yield. So that's the good news. I guess the less good news would be that they've acknowledged the world is pretty tough. There's not much growth going on at BT at the moment. In fact, the company is contracting a bit, and we all know why. It's competitive in telecoms land. You know, people are bundling all sorts of stuff together, Sky and other names. BT's got great opportunity with their EE business, of course. If you've got an EE mobile, you'll know that BT bought that, and they still haven't integrated all the billing, all the bills and stuff like that. I've got a BT fixed line broadband, and I've got an EE mobile, and the two are on separate bills, which seems a bit bonkers to me. But that's all coming, you assume, in the next little while. Probably the other lurker is the fact they've talked about their pension deficit, a cool 11.3 billion quid. That's not particularly out of kilter with expectations. It's just a pretty damn big number. And also what they're doing is they're having to pump money in. And this is maybe where people start getting a bit worried, because they're having to pump in hundreds of millions of quid, not just this year and next year, but they're talking about the whole of the 2020s. So, you know, this is a pretty longer term commitment in order to match their pension obligations. You put all of that together, if you'd have asked me before the market opened, I would have said, pretty much as per your comment or instinct, Justin, cost cuts and related, holding the dividend, the shares would have had a relief bounce, because they've been obviously a bit of a dog over the last couple of years. I'm surprised by the move. I think it's a bit anomalous. All I will say is that the company are talking to the market in the wider world shortly, and maybe they'll give a few extra thoughts on everything. But to me, it's a surprising move. And if I was a brave investor, and I guess by definition I am, I think this is more of an opportunity than a threat.
Yeah, do you know what? It's worth checking out the chart here, because it's interesting, because their previous low, which was on the 23rd of March, and let's have a look at that. So it's on the 23rd of March, it opened at 217, the high was 220, and it closed today at 219. Right now, it's hovering on that, and it did open, and today it opened lower. So it opened today at 220, and it's now showing a little bit above that. So if it holds here, I'd say that's a good, you know, double sort of bottom sort of charting formation, and it should rise. Like you say, everything's they're doing something about it massively. You know, awesome. Laying off that amount of staff, they're not just ticking boxes here and talking the talk. They are walking the walk here, and I'm thinking, you know, saving that amount of money. And like I said, the revenue and profit isn't that far off. Okay, the comparable wasn't quite hard probably, but I think for a long term here, and they're securing that dividend. What's not to like here? You know?
That's right. No, you know, as I say, you can make an alternative view, which is based on more and more competition and having to fund the pension deficit and eventually having to cut the dividend. But, you know, they've given pretty damn good guidance, clarity here for the next 2-3 years. You know the plan. The plan sounds all right. And actually, I just think it's a bit too cheap. And, you know, my rough rule of thumb would be, what's a sensible yield for BT to be on, gut feel? And I would say 5%. That reflects the fact that it's not a particularly growthy business, but, you know, there's a bit of stability there. We all pay our broadband dues and whatever. And a 5% yield on a 15p div, if my elementary maths are all right, is £3 a share. So I think that's kind of risk reward where you are on it at the moment. To me, that's pretty attractive.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Who else was reporting, Chris?
So, got to talk about Next. We've talked about UK retail quite a bit in our chats, Justin. And, you know, I've obviously been of the view that there's, again, a bit more opportunity than threat there. Certainly, retailers with number one positions, decent balance sheets and the like. Next has had a bit of a stormer today. I don't own the shares at the moment. I did own them lower down and traded them well. But they've actually pushed up a bit further today, getting back to towards that sort of fabled kind of 60 quid level, which is what they fell down to a couple of years back when they had their first of their major whoopsies. They're actually saying the weather really helped. The little mini heat wave of a few weeks back, and arguably the last few days as well in some parts of the country, has really helped them. They had a very interesting graphic on their disclosure this morning showing when it was a horrible freezing weather, sales were down. When it was summer heatwave weather, sales were materially up. And that's surprised them a little bit in terms of the magnitude, and hence led them to up their forecast a little bit today in terms of revenues and profits. And the market obviously likes that. So for me, an indication again that retail is not a completely sunk ship. There are opportunities out there, particularly in those more sensible names. Would I chase Next here? probably not, because I think this one has been kind of like an early mover. But then I think you go and look at some other names which haven't played catch-up so much. If you had to push me for a favourite of the larger stuff, I would say Kingfisher, sub £3, B&Q and related all also benefits from things like a heat wave, bank holidays and the like. That would be my pick at the moment. But, you know, well done any next holders. You've done rather well today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, is the share price up today?
Price is up 5-6% today. So, you know, that's pretty to be expected. They up their forecast by a few percent, and obviously retail's been a bit under pressure, so you've had a slightly bigger reaction there. But it's coming back towards it's now in the 55 to 60 pound range, and that's quite a big level because, as I say, a couple of years ago they had their very first whoopsie. They blamed getting their sales strategy wrong, and the shares fell to £60 back then. They were sort of trading at about £80 or something. So this return to this sort of circa £55-60 level is a big old moment. For me, it's a time of pause and reflection. I wouldn't be chasing it here, but you know, well done on Next. They've come out the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and anything else? I mean, it's gapped up today for a big stock. That's a big jump. It's just gapped up from like 50, just from 52 to 55, which is, wow, big gap.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, Next has done well today. I've got a chat on ITV where they had a little trading update today. There's two stories on ITV, really, I think. The first is sort of the little trading update. They said all the right things in terms of studios and online. You know, this sort of content area is where ITV is pretty strong. And obviously, they've got a very big event coming up in a month's time or so with the World Cup. You know, that's always a decent event for them in terms of advertising revenues and the like. So ITV, I think, has got some interesting stuff going on. They've obviously hired the ex-EasyJet CEO, Carolyn McCall, to lead the business. And she's got her big strategic review later in the year. But, you know, she's saying all the right things in the statement today. The shares are pushing up deeper into the mid to high 150s, which is good. The second story, of course, is something which happened yesterday, which is that Vodafone splurged a bunch of money on some Liberty Media assets in Europe. You know, that's their bag. Personally, I think they overpaid a bit, but there you go. Liberty is a 10% shareholder of ITV. Liberty is another one of these big sort of media concerns. Obviously, that's raised again hopes that Liberty might use some of that Vodafone money to come in and bid for ITV for the shares that they don't own. So we'll have to see on that front. But I think ITV looks interesting here from a speculative and a tactical position as well. And as I say, if you're looking for kind of World Cup beneficiaries, my kind of forward attacking three would probably be ITV, something like a Green King, which is also another classic beneficiary, and then probably one of the beer companies or something, which again tends to benefit from such a big global media event. I think I saw yesterday, I think the World Cup touches 3.5 billion people around the world. And given there's only about double that number of people in the whole world, that's a lot of football supporters. Or I guess as the Americans call it, soccer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and again, it's interesting on the chart at the moment. They are at multi-year lows, aren't they? Pretty much down to, you know, 140. But do you know what? That's been a downtrend since when? 2016, really. They did a double top at 280. 2016, it came all the way down, bounced a bit, almost a false rally a little bit for half a year, and it's come down again now. And so it is, be interesting to see if it holds that 140 level, because that's where it's been bouncing at. But interesting. Hopefully the World Cup will save it. Who knows?
That's right. Well, they're making all the right noises today, and I say the share is rightly up. So I think there's a few angles on ITV to think about. And there you go. I guess you can always do a bit of investment research by watching the channel as well. That might be an idea.
Marvellous stuff. I'll try a bit of that over the summer, I think. Why not? Cheers, Chris. Thanks for that. Speak next week.
See you soon. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, BT. That's BTA. At four, I talked to Colin earlier, Bezant Resources, BZT. BT, I'm astounded. I don't know what's going on there. I really don't. I mean, the final results were half decent. Revenue's down 1%. Okay, so the restructuring. But profit was up. Pre-tax profit was up. you know, and the dividend, 7%, pretty much. And they're chopping 13,000 jobs, which saved them £800 million. So I can't understand why the big drop-off. I think because the big strategic review has scared many people, I think, and people are selling. So I don't know why. But going forward, it should be decent from here. I've said that a lot of times, though. Yeah, at four, Byzant Resources, Colin there. It's a massive asset to that company. It's tiny, and they've got cash as well. At three, Inspiration Healthcare, IHC. I don't know what's happening there. At two, I had Jeremy Martin on the podcast yesterday. Horizonte Minerals, HZM. And number one, most followed company, is Faron Pharmaceuticals, F-A-R-N. It's been highly followed for quite a few days now. All right, here are the top five most liked RNSs. It's at five, it is... Hang on, we let the page load. At five, it's BT, final results. Yeah, I thought they were okay. But there's a lot of people done. At four, Angus Energy, acquisition of 25% interest in Balcom completes. At three, Nostra Terra, Permian Basin, G6 well, total depth and results. At two, Feedback, Holdings and Company, Trevor Brown, selling down below 3% now. And number one, it's from ARC Minerals, that's ARCM, block listing, 6 monthly return. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.